This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, we review the top stories of 2017. Hello again. I'm Carol Castiel. Donald Trump's contentious first year as U.S. president was among the defining stories of 2017, from the inauguration of the former reality TV star and real estate mogul to the first major legislative achievement of his administration, the Tax Reform Act, which came only days before the end of the year. The domestic political landscape has been a roller coaster. The firing of FBI Director James Comey and the naming of a special counsel to investigate Russia's interference in the U.S. election and potential cooperation with Trump campaign officials are likely to have far-reaching ramifications for our republic. The country was shaken by two mass shootings, one in Las Vegas and another at a small church in rural Texas. This prompted cries for elusive gun safety legislation. This past year, workplace tensions over sexual misconduct burst into the open. Investigative reporting uncovered a pattern of harassment and assault by Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein. In the months since, a growing tide of women, including celebrities, have shared their stories via the social media movement #MeToo. A white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, which turned deadly, sparked fears of greater racial tensions and divisions in America. On the international front, tensions with North Korea. Catalonia conducted a disputed referendum to break away from Spain, and by year's end, we saw pro-secessionist parties with a slim majority in the regional parliament, and then a mass exodus of the Muslim minority Rohingya from Myanmar, prompted by a deadly crackdown by the security forces. Leaders from around the world have condemned the horrific acts of violence, but the plight of the Rohingya remains dire. These stories and much more were among the most astonishing developments of 2017. And with us to discuss the top global and domestic stories of the year are two seasoned journalists who are no strangers at these VOA microphones. Michael Williams is a contributor to CBS Radio, and Tracy Wilkinson is diplomatic and foreign policy correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. And both are valued panelists on our sister program, Issues in the News, VOA's roundup of the week's top stories. And they join me now at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Michael, let me begin with you, and I'd like to get your take after my laundry list, so to speak, of the top domestic and international stories. What are among the biggest stories that you see as defining 2017?
The top story has to be the Trump presidency. It affects so many things. Obviously, any time you change power at the top of the American government, it's going to make changes. But this was so different in terms of not only the person that was elected, but the style with which he governs and what he really represents as a part of America, what was really brought forward, you know, in the American people. And it started on really day one with the inauguration. When you see the tenor and the mood of that speech was very dark. Usually you have a very uplifting, very light, very hopeful type of speech there. And this speech was very different in terms of how these things stop now. The sort of dark, I think you used the word dystopian, a sort of measure for that. And it's gone on in terms of how he governs, the people that are in that White House, the way people respond to him. It has to be the top story of the year and will continue to be for however long this presidency lasts.
Indeed, and of course, it has reverberations across the world. Your take, Tracy Wilkinson.
Right. If I were to say what are the top three stories internationally and domestically, I'd say Trump, Trump, and Trump, because he does really, you know, everything he does has so turned the world upside down, the United States and other countries and the U.S. relationships with so many other countries. But if we look back at that speech that Michael referred to, that spoke of carnage marching across the United States with rusted out factories like tombstones, it was very dark. But if you look at it, he is doing what he said he would do there. In that speech, he said he was going to foster a United States that looked inward and no longer cared so much about international relationships. And that that's what he has done. He's, you know, walked out of the Paris Climate Accord, which was a historic accord. The United States is the only country now not party to it. And deal after deal that he's either backed out of or shown less enthusiasm for. So I think that not only is he reshaping domestically the United States, but international politics are in for quite an upheaval.
Indeed. Back to you, Michael, and on the subject of Mr. Trump, we saw him fire FBI Director James Comey and all the fallout there, too. How do you see the ongoing Russia probe by Special Counsel Robert Mueller, a couple of congressional committees? That also has some major implications for the year and going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Many think that this is the major quote-unquote threat, you know, to the Trump presidency, is the ongoing investigation into Russia meddling and what connection there was between the Trump campaign and the now obvious and affirmed meddling that was done by the Russians. I don't think that this is in question by any reasonable person anymore. There was definitely meddling within the American elections by the Russians. And there is just ongoing investigation to see what else happened, how they did it, and if perchance the Trump campaign was complicit. This is going to be a very important test of, I believe, how our systems will continue to operate. If we allow the American president to fire this particular special investigator, Mueller, without consequence, it will signal a radical shift in how the powers of the executive branch are allowed to operate. We can already argue that there is too much power in the executive branch anyway under any president. Given the fact that a president can stop a investigation into his own doing and basically set himself above the law would be a new high and lows, I think. And this will be the test, whether that will be allowed to happen. It also brings forward the importance of the 2018 midterm elections, because those Senate and congressional investigations that you talked about will be probably either stopped or continued based on who wins, which party wins those two elections. So, yes, that hiring of Mueller as a prosecutor, I personally believe he's a man above reproach. He will find out the truth if allowed to.
What's your take, Tracy?
Well, and what is so baffling about this, as clear as the meddling is to, as you say, every reasonable person, Trump continues to call it a hoax, to call the investigation a hoax, and to contend that nothing really serious happened. And I think even, you know, ardent Trump supporters are a little baffled about why he's so reluctant to criticize Russia, to criticize Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, where he has, you know, much criticism for just about everybody else, but he seems on an unusually passive relationship with Russia. And so I think that raises a lot of questions about what's really going on here. And the other issue, and this in some ways is even more long-term, is the way in which Trump and a lot of his associates are sort of undermining the very institutions that they, in theory, were sworn to defend and protect, like the FBI and law enforcement, and instead Trump and his aides have sought to discredit it. And so I think that has very serious ramifications for the democracy and for the functioning of democracy and rule of law and balance of power and all of these things. So I'm very concerned about that. And I think a lot of people are watching to see what happens with this investigation, how far it goes. Already there have been several indictments, guilty pleas. I think that Mueller seems to be making good progress. The question is he allowed to do his job, as you mentioned?
Indeed. And another group of people under attack are journalists throughout the year, Michael. That's another important part of our democracy, to hold the powerful to account. And yet, Mr. Trump in particular seems to denigrate journalism, calling news that doesn't appeal to him or which he finds unflattering fake.
Yeah, he's continued the relationship that he had previously had with the press as a reality star. But of course, the stakes are much higher when you're the president of the United States. And calling into question the press, which is necessary. Every founding father of the United States understood that a free press and a fully functioning press was kind of a linchpin, a cornerstone of a fully functioning democracy. But he is willing to put that relationship and that role into question for political purposes. The long-term ramifications, we can't even see out to the horizon for how much damage this is doing to this particular institution. And I would call out to my colleagues in the press to say that they, because of economics, the economics of this thing, it feels like people want to contract their news organizations. And we've all seen it. We've all seen friends that have had to leave, and we've seen bureaus closing. We've seen organizations closing. But this is the time to expand, because we can't just cover breaking news. And that's what's happening now. I would love to see those two words less, maybe not at all in this year, breaking news, because everything can't be breaking news, you know, and so we're sacrificing the news of the moment for those things that take subtlety and subtext. We're not covering those things, and these things have subtlety and subtext. So I would call out to news organizations to expand and really do the best reporting that you've ever done, because this is the time where it's really, really needed. Not breaking news, but we need to report the news of what is broken. That's what our job is.
And of course, journalists, like any professional, have their own shortcomings. But nonetheless, I think that perhaps journalists and the journalistic profession have come in for perhaps unwarranted criticism. Tracy?
Oh, definitely. I think so. You know, I spent many years overseas in countries where the press was intimidated and controlled by governments. And it means that ultimately there's no shared truth. The people, the population, the public has no faith in what they're being told, what they learn, what they know to be true. And I always thought, thank God for the United States, where we have a free and robust press. And you're right. Again, back to my other point of an institution that this administration seems to be trying to undermine, criticizing anything that, you know, smacks of slightly critical reporting. And it's very dangerous.
It is. And we see, of course, another phenomenon in 2017, the rise of Russia. We see it on the world stage, Vladimir Putin's Russia. Let's be very clear here and make a distinction between the regime and the people. And that is disconcerting. And as you said earlier, Tracy, the fact that Mr. Trump has criticized just about everybody on the world stage, some of our closest allies, but not our adversary, Vladimir Putin, whose authoritarian regime knows no limits.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very hard to figure out what Putin does. And to his credit, he's very clear about what he wants to do, which is undermining Western institutions. He believes that what Germany is to the West, Russia should have been in that spot. So there you go. He grew up in the KGB of the Soviet Union, which is extremely large, extremely powerful. Russia has contracted after the demise of the Soviet Union. I forget who said it. I'd love to credit that person, but basically said it's a gas station with an army. You know, it really sort of punches above its weight in terms of what it really does in the world, in terms of economy, all these things. However, it does have that huge nuclear arsenal, and it does have that proximity to Western Europe. It is odd, the relationship between Trump and Putin, and it defies explanation at this point. Would love to see the facts that explain it.
And as Trump's America has withdrawn, we've seen Russia, Putin's Russia, step in. So you saw that in Syria, where Russian troops went in and really turned the tide of that war to the favor of President Bashar Assad against U.S. interests. And we've seen, you know, Russia pretty much go unpunished for what it did in the Ukraine, annexing Crimea. Putin even took a victory tour of Syria, you know, to review the troops. That would have been unheard of just a few years ago. And so he's definitely stepping in to any void left by a retreating United States.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Michael Williams, he's contributor to CBS Radio, and Tracy Wilkinson, from whom you just heard. She's diplomatic and foreign policy correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. We're discussing the top stories of 2017. And this is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castillo VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a hearty year-end shout-out to one of our most loyal fans, John Nestor Milimuno from Guinea-Conakry. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our program about the top stories of 2017, and back to you, Michael Williams. Let's move on to what's going on in Europe, particularly the Catalonia referendum, and we're seeing this separatist movement even as we end the year.
So in Spain, the separatist movement, again, I call it the philosophy of left-handed unicorns. It seems like everyone wants to sort of separate themselves into exactly the thing that they identify with, and those groups are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So it's not enough now for Catalan to be a part of Spain. It's like, we account for most of the economy there, so we want to be our own entity. That's the push. That's the drive in our societies these days. Look, there is a strong pushback from Spain, obviously, you know, to do this. And the last thing that I have read and the news that I've heard is that the official federal response is, well, those people can't take power power if they are in jail or exiled. So that's how serious they are about keeping that country unified. But again, it's that whole feeling of this nationalist populist movement that's, and this is just the latest place where that's happening in force.
How do you see that?
Right,
is that significant to you?
Yes,
Tracy?
In a sense, it's a natural follow-on to Brexit, where, you know, England or the United Kingdom voted to leave the European Union. You see nationalist movements in Hungary, Belgium, many places. And that's, I think, the fear of many Europeans is that if Catalonia goes, then, you know, there goes the rest of certainly Spain. You know, you have the Basque region, you have many autonomous regions within Spain. And I think Spain thought they had kind of gotten over the impetus to separate that had been strong after the Franco years. But because of the mood in Europe now, these separate movements are gaining traction. But I think that makes everyone quite nervous, because where does it end once it gets started?
And back to a more of a domestic story, with certainly with international repercussions, how about the allegations and actual accusations of sexual misconduct that we saw burst out into the open, starting with the Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein and going on and on to other men, important men in the media and elsewhere? Here, even in the Congress, we saw Senator Al Franken, a Democrat, having to step down due to allegations of sexual misconduct.
As a media person, this may be the most mesmerizing story that I've ever seen unfold. When you see one article in the New York Times about a Hollywood producer who many people could not have identified, neither by name nor by face. Nobody really knew who this guy was unless you're in the industry. And talking about those allegations has created this domino effect that is now, you could say, global in scope. People are certainly paying attention to it, but it has this tidal wave of repercussions here in the United States. I think the question now is this a generational thing? Because many people are saying, well, this is a reckoning, they're calling it now, mm-hmm. the reckoning of how men of a certain generation have behaved for years and years and years, and there's a reckoning to come. But is it really? Because we now have allegations of people from other news organizations such as Vice. And these are young people. These are 30-year-olds. These are Generation X or Y. I don't know if I can put the letter on it, but they're younger than me. And they are engaging in the exact same behavior. So it seems that no one is safe. And I think that's probably a pretty good thing. This is not a bad thing. What I don't like to see, people getting railroaded. There's a question about whether Al Franken was forced to resign, maybe a little bit too soon, should have gone through with the process. It shouldn't be about accusations. It should be about proof and truth. But when we have proof and truth coming out, and as we have in many cases, it's a wonderful thing to see.
How do you see this?
And when we have multiple accusers, certainly in the Roy Moore case, you know, there hasn't been a trial, but I think, well, a lot of people don't have any doubt in the women who accused him.
Now, of course, Roy Moore was the Republican candidate to be senator in Alabama.
Senate seat in Alabama, yes. I don't think it's generational. I think abuse of power, which is what this kind of mounts to, is all generations, all communities, and certainly all industries, as we are seeing. Will it be a reckoning? I don't know. Al Franken's comments in one of his resignation speeches, you know, he says how ironic it is that he's stepping down while, you know, a man who on tape talked about abusing women is sitting in the White House. So it makes me wonder just how deep and far this will go. I think right now it is a wonderful airing of practices that have gone on for a very long time. I don't think a woman of my age has not had some sort of encounter like this. So I'm hoping this will have long-term effects, but I'm just not sure yet.
North Korea, Michael.
In a
Rocket
word.
Man. Right. I mean, not to minimize or in any way mock this very terrible threat.
Yeah.
But that has to also be up there among the biggest stories of the year.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think back to the transition between the presidencies of Obama and Trump. And one of the things that came out of that meeting where they sat together and talked about the transition, and President Obama had said to incoming President Trump that the thing that would keep him up at night would be North Korea. And I think that was an esoteric thing for most people at the time, but look at it now, a year later. It is very worrisome because this particular leader of North Korea seems to have much broader and much more ferocious ambitions than his predecessors, and seems intent on using nuclear weapons to preclude his removal as a leader of that regime. The role of China is so important here. How do you balance this economic villain role that Trump has given China with the need to have their cooperation on that peninsula. And again, you talk about Russia. We're now asking Russia for help there. So again, the U.S. role of leadership and diplomacy is going to be so important here. And I wonder, because as a diplomatic reporter, you know that the top floor in Foggy Bottom is absolutely empty. Where are the diplomats? Where's the ambassador to South Korea? We don't have one.
And in addition, again, this brings us to another very important story, Tracy, which is the lack of high-level appointments in the State Department.
Right. And North Korea is a great example to examine that, because experts will tell you we've probably never been in more precarious position vis-a-vis North Korea and its nuclear power in decades. And I think you're right to say that this North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, seems to play by different rules, as does this American president. And so it's very disconcerting and very confusing, because on the one hand, you have Secretary of State Rex Tillerson trying to promote diplomacy, literally being in China, talking to leaders of China about North Korea, comes home, and he's barely landing when Trump completely undermines him in a tweet saying that Tillerson was wasting his time by pursuing diplomacy. So the signals are very mixed, very confusing, perhaps deliberately so. Perhaps it's a strategy to be bad cop, good cop, but I wonder. And the lack of key personnel, key ambassadors, experts, the number of people who have left the State Department, they see no future or they've been forced out, is disconcerting. It's deliberate on Tillerson's part, because he's talking about a redesign, a streamlining of the bureaucracy, and the State Department, like any bureaucracy, could use that. But to leave such key positions in such key issues and key geographical positions is very dangerous.
Well, back to you, Michael. Anything we left out? What other story, you know, comes to your mind or trend that you'd like to bring to our attention?
Well, certainly the violence in the world. You know, we don't have what would we call a major conflict, but certainly not of the level of the world wars that we've had and larger conflicts, Korea, that sort of thing. But the amount of violence that's going on in the world, both at a macro level with armed conflicts between armies and militias and ISIS and so forth, and certainly the shootings that we see in the United States, the mass shootings where one person now with one weapon can wreak such havoc in such a short period of time. I think that can happen anywhere in the world now. The proliferation of weapons is shocking when you look at the numbers, and how we're going to deal with that as a society globally is going to be of interest. President Trump has said in the United States that it's a mental health issue, and he might be exactly right about that. But if he is right about it, then how do you address it? What are we going to do about it? How are we going to really cleanse ourselves of this issue? If there's any one thing that's sort of defeatist and depressing, maybe that thing might be it.
Yeah, there seems to be such reticence to talk about gun control or gun safety legislation in this country. Politicians seem to, you know, run from it like the plague. And it's, to me, baffling, because, you know, the United States, in terms of access to guns and ownership, probably outstrips just about any other country. And yet we can't even talk about, well, you know, a ban on assault rifles or a ban on, you know, the equipment that makes them into automatic rifles. We can't even begin to have that conversation without a sort of reaction of, well, you know, Second Amendment and such. And I think it is kind of frustrating, because if we can't even have the conversation, then I think we're going to keep having mass shootings.
And I think most analysts and certainly civilians in this country don't see a discrepancy or any kind of contradiction between having gun safety legislation and still upholding the Second Amendment. But those who talk about defending the Second Amendment sometimes have problems with the even basic gun safety legislation for some reason.
Yeah, there's this feeling that when these things happen, that they're almost like a natural disaster. It's like, these are things that are bound to happen. You know, it's going to happen. We just have to deal with it, deal with the victims, help them through somehow. We'll send them our thoughts and prayers, is the quote that you see.
Well, speaking of natural disasters, as we end the program, we certainly had our share of them this year, Tracy. Hurricanes.
Hurricanes, some of the worst on record. Fires in California from the northern wine country all the way down to Los Angeles, that will also apparently be the most destructive on record. For me, the lasting story out of the hurricanes is how slow recovery has been, especially in a place like Puerto Rico, where they still don't have electrical power in large parts of the island. And so it raises concerns about, A, why so much disaster at once? You know, is it climate change? And that's a debate we should be having. But also, what is our preparation for these disasters?
And I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Michael Williams of CBS Radio and Tracy Wilkinson, diplomatic and foreign policy correspondent for the LA Times. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Zubair El Tayeb. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week and next year for another Encounter on The Voice of America.